Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Why don't you say espresso in Italian?
Because you just say un caffè.
So that's what,
because
a coffee is there.
A coffee is there, yeah.
Okay, exactly. Right. Yeah. Do you know what I say? Espresso.
You know, people say, and what do you ask for, a bruschetta rather than bruschetta?
Yeah. Can I have a panini, please?
Yeah.
Have one panini, please. One panini.
Just one.
And panini. Two cappuccinos. How to wire James Horncastle love in 10 easy steps.
Do you know the background between, why a cappuccino is called a cappuccino?
No, please tell us.
Okay, so it is a shot of coffee with a load of foam milk on the top, froth milk, which is like a hood, and that comes from the hood that the Capuchin monks used to wear. Okay.
Wow, interesting. That's really interesting.
That's where you get cappuccino, because it's essentially Capuchin, the Capuchin monks.
James, what did you make of Ajax's performance in the Champions League qualifying round?
Ajax is still Ajax. If you watch how they play, that philosophy comes through. But what's fascinating, really, is a lot of the players that who are still there are playing in different positions. You think of Daley Blind, for example, back at centre-back last year. Yeah. Now he's in midfield.
Yeah.
You think of Mazraoui, who was a full-back for them last year. He's partnering him in midfield.
What's the thinking behind that, do you think?
Well, I think this just goes to the schooling that there is at Ajax. Yeah.
But they're just showing off.
Yeah, kind of. It's not about systems. It's about the principles that you are taught, that you are coached, and that, you know, you can give these players jobs, not positions, essentially, and they will fulfill those tasks. And I think Blind and Mazraoui, I think it's quite interesting watching Mazraoui, particularly for the first goal that Ajax conceded. They drew 2-2 away at PAOK. And you saw Mazraoui was way out of position and maybe caught in a no man's land between us, like, am I a fullback here or am I a midfield player? Mm. And for a moment, he'd slipped into the fullback kind of mentality. And all of a sudden, PAOK were able to carve through Ajax really easily. New centre-backs, a new midfield configuration, because it's not only Frankie de Jong that's gone, but Lasse Schöne. I don't know if you saw Lasse Schöne's arrival in Genoa.
I haven't seen this. No. Tell us about it.
It was like someone signing for Galatasaray. It was like when Darius Vassell ended up in Ankara.
Yeah, I remember that. That was funny. Yeah.
Or it was like Genoa had signed Lionel Messi instead of Lasse Schöne.
They turned out in their thousands.
I mean, yeah, and they'd already got his own chant going. Exactly. I mean, completely new midfield, old players at Ajax, but playing in new positions, if you like. And then, particularly in the PAOK game, less so in the Eredivisie, You had Kasper Dolberg. Remember when there was so much hype around Dolberg?
Mm. Yeah.
Dolberg was playing up front until he came off after half an hour and Huntelaar came on.
Didn't he have a particularly quiet international tournament? And because he was really hyped going into a tournament for Denmark. I forget which one it was. And then he had quite a quiet one. And
yeah.
It kind of just disappeared after that.
But yeah, he was kind of a peripheral figure last season as well, wasn't he? Really? But
he got subbed after half an hour.
Yeah, but you look at the...
for the Hunter.
Attacking players that they still have. Dusan Tadic, who was playing as a kind of false nine last year and obviously had a career year.
Mm.
He was playing out on the wing. Ziyech is still there. Van de Beek at the moment is still there, even though there's interest from
I'm surprised
Real.
Ziyech hasn't been heavy. I mean, obviously, time of recording this show because of the way the transfer window falls on this particular week, the first week of the season. I mean, we're recording this on a Thursday morning, we should point out. The time of recording, I've not seen any links for Ziyech at all, which is...
He's been linked to a few clubs, but
But seriously, I mean...
Not really. No. I think the difficulty is, because of the season that Ajax had, they're asking, and they're quite right to ask, for twice the money that they would have sold him for last year.
Mm.
And that's an issue. Also, I think there's a limited amount of landing spots. Almost, I think the stock of some of these players has risen a little bit too high. I think in a different summer, Van de Beek would have been gone like a couple of months ago.
Right.
But now, like, you're looking at him rather than, you know, ending up at a, you know, upper mid-table German club or, you know, taking a similar route to David Klaassen or whatever. Now he's maybe Real Madrid's option if they don't get Paul Pogba or something like that.
Christian Eriksen still frantically waving outside the window.
Yeah.
Go, what, you're going to go after? That's mental. I played at Ajax ages ago. I'm much better than him.
I'm blonder than him.
Yeah, I'm on rubbish wages as well.
I think it's an interesting point for Ajax because you talked about the closure of the English transfer window. Well, of course, for most other leagues, it doesn't close for a couple of weeks yet. So looking at Ajax now, I guess this will be the same with a couple of the teams we talk about through the course of the coming minutes. This is not the finished team that is going to be there at the start of September. And I think Ajax are in a funny position because, you know, they've been compared, and especially their run to the semi-finals of the Champions League was compared to Monaco in 2017. Now, you know, Monaco's plan at the start of that summer was to sell two players, Bernardo Silva and Bakayoko. And then you get the offer for Benjamin Mendy, which is like, oh my God, is that sort of money really out there? And all of a sudden, having said to the dressing room, right, we're only going to sell a couple of players, you sell another guy, and all of a sudden they're like, well, hang about, he can go, but I can't.
Mm.
And it's very, very hard to keep the lid on it after that. Mm. I just wonder where that tipping point is, right? I don't think they've ever said we're only going to sell two players, but they've been in a position, especially with the big sales of Frenkie de Jong and Matthijs de Ligt, who it was a little bit protracted, but they always knew he was going. They bought themselves the space, the financial space, to, I think, go on and dominate the Eredivisie for many years if they play it right, and to get back in the Champions League consistently and crush the opposition domestically in a way like, say, Bayern have done. But also to not let too many other players go. But where does it stop? I don't think we really know yet. And I think Lasse Schürrle going, as James says, that's something that is a bit out of left field. That's something that no one expected. But if one of your most experienced players said, you know what, maybe I fancy a change, I think that has potentially quite a profound effect on the dressing room.
Don't know. Any love for Miroslav Stok coming off the bench for Pauk?
Always.
29-year-old ex-Man City Miroslav Stok.
Yeah, his stock's fallen quite a lot since then.
I think you're right, yeah.
But to go back on...
It's not a very tasty stock anymore.
Bit stodgy. Yeah.
The money that Ajax have brought in for De Ligt and Frenkie de Jong, and as a whole in the transfer market this summer, 181 million euro, which they've reinvested around 60. And as Andy was saying, you know, we've seen that how Overmars and Van der Sar, their strategy is to, yes, promote young players, give them opportunities, you know, sign the captain of the under-19s who's playing with guys who are older than him, but also to bring in someone like Quincy Promise for for what, 15, 16 million.
Yeah,
he didn't get on against Park, did he? But is there any concern about the result they've had away in that first leg? I mean, we'll find out later, but next week. But.
Well, remember last season they were quite a slow burn, Ajax, at least in the Eredivisie.
Right.
Throughout the Champions League group stages, we were talking about PSV and what Mark van Bommel was doing there and how it looked like they were going to win the league. So again, they didn't win their first game in the Eredivisie of the season, their curtain raiser. I think it's going to take time. Look, when any team goes through the number of changes that they have, you look at their defence, the centre-back pairing that they've got, Lisandro Martinez, who's signed from that wonderful team called, I think it's Defensa y Justicia.
Or Defence and Justice.
Yeah,
I remember the South American song.
For Channel 5.
Sounds like a crime drama.
Is the manager Ross Kemp? Ross Kemp is the manager, yeah.
And the guy next to him, is it Per Schurz? Again, 19. So extremely young pair of centre-backs.
That's really very much the story of Ajax throughout their history though, right?
Mm.
I think the repositioning of Daley Blind's quite interesting. There was a great interview with Louis van Gaal in France Football last week where he was slightly less complimentary about the work of Erik ten Hag exactly as complimentary about the work as Erik ten Hag as you would imagine, I suppose, you know, okay, he's not as good as me sort of thing. But that they asked him, you know, are there only a few little things that needed tweaking to get them into the Champions League final? He said, well, no, you can't say that because they missed it. That's the bottom line. They missed it. And, you know, he was quite critical of the way that they defended, for example, especially, and you can understand that with the way the fourth half against Tottenham went. But it was interesting. He was saying how Daley Blind in that interview was like, he would be one of the best players in the world if he wasn't slow. And I think that's something that you talked about, slow burning, James. I think it got right to the end of the season before anyone outside the Netherlands said, Daley Blind's having an absolutely incredible season. He was vital for what they're doing. And to me, it feels very Ajax, Barcelona, total football lineage, that they would try and ride out this period, at least for the moment, by sticking him in midfield.
Another team in the Champions League qualifying that caught the eye, obviously Porto, being involved at this early stage. They beat Krasnodar in the first leg.
Yeah, and they deserve to as well.
Sergio Oliveira scored, who weirdly was on loan at PAOK last season.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is a theme of...
What do you make of that, Andy? Presumably you watched that game.
I did. I mean, it's kind of a theme of Portuguese football, and we've talked about it before, that sort of recycling of things that you don't think are of any use anymore. And Sergio Oliveira, I think he went off to PAOK, and in the end, they couldn't afford the release clause to keep him permanently. He went there, and he was a double winner that they would love to keep him. And there have been a few departures at Porto this season. There's still the sense that maybe they're a midfielder short, although Uribe has just signed this summer, this last week, the Colombian. And, you know, there's a sense that Sergio Oliveira, who's a very good player, is only there because they haven't got anyone else at the moment, but he played really tremendously well. I mean, he was really important in the first part of Sergio Conceição's Porto. I mean, Conceição is sometimes criticised by some fans of the club for picking like physical specimens above like technically excellent players. And I guess Sergio Oliveira is one of those ones that they think of. I mean, you know, technically he's no slouch, but he's about the power, and that's something that he really brought to Sergio Conceição's original Porto team when he took over. He had a great game, and he scored free kick right at the end, which was very, very useful indeed. He's hoping to carve himself a future at the club, despite the arrival of Uribe, and there might be more players on the way. But given that, yeah, again, they're a work in progress, I just find this one of the most fascinating stages of the European season, really, because this is a point which can absolutely make or break your season. If Krasnodar go out, just like if Dinamo go out, if Ajax were to go out, God forbid, this is something that would like scar their entire season. And you're not ready. Your team's not finished. You haven't got enough football in your legs.
Mm.
And so you're playing incredibly high stakes poker. Like while you're still on the beach, you're still half on the beach, really.
Mm.
So I think that makes it really interesting. I mean, the way that Porto are doing it on the hoof, particularly, it's clear that they're reconstructing. Of course, they've had to find a replacement for Iker Casillas, which has really taken over their entire summer. They're looking at Kevin Trapp at one point.
Gigi.
That didn't happen. Gigi. Exactly. Yeah. It looked like it was going to be the fairy tale.
Mike Myers of top-level international football.
And eventually they settled on Agustin Marchesin, who's come over from Club America. Just arrived like less than a week ago. It's gone straight into the team. Like after this incredibly arduous flight from Mexico City via Paris and Lisbon, in the end he got driven to Porto, and then
like literally like planes, trains, and automobiles.
Yeah,
Steve Martin and
then
John
here, here he is going off to Russia, and you know, but Krasnodar's facility is very comfortable. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
but and he goes straight in the team, and he made a really, really important save right near the end. They're talking about it in Mexico, as you can imagine, where they're still kind of mourning his departure a little bit.
Their scouting network at Porto is really well respected, right? So it's unlikely they're going to have panicked to try and find someone, because presumably they've been looking at him for a while.
Well, yeah, but it's clear that they were all in on Trapp at one point, and
right.
that wasn't happening.
Right,
they were keen on Buffon. They were looking at Kubek from Rennes, and that never happened.
Right.
So for Marchesin to come over, having never played in Europe, having done a lot of travelling, having moved his life on the other side of the world, and having stood there and done bugger all for most of the game in Krasnodar, and then make this save right at the end, which is potentially a really vital one for them going forward. I mean, that's something that's really amazing. And to be fair, as Porto goalkeeper, you are going to have to do a lot of standing about and then make a good save at the moment where it's expected. So it's a great start for him, and it's a great start for them, because whenever this is talked about in the Portuguese papers, and you know, it's not exclusively the Portuguese papers, but it's always framed as the match that's worth 40 million. It was the same with Benfica when they had to qualify to get in the Champions League last. That it's every stage, they can't get through four paragraphs talking about Champions League qualifiers without talking about what financially it means. And I guess for some people that might be a bit surprising, because you think of Benfica and their history in this competition and how that's made them the club that they are. But no, they're all talking about the money and what that means for their season.
Well, so you mentioned Benfica there. I mean, they started the season pretty well on Sunday. A Bruno Fernandes inspired Sporting collapsed to a 5. Have you seen this, James? Collapsed to a 5-0 defeat in the. Can I just say, and we can talk about European Super Cups, you know, the Super Cups all around Europe, but there is not one better named than the Portuguese one, the Super Taça Candido de Oliveira.
Super Taça.
Super Taça, sorry. My pronunciation all season will be terrible. Get used to it.
That's why you're here.
Benfica smashed them 5-0.
Yeah, I mean, is this the Luciano Vietto effect of Sporting signing? I mean, this is, again,
you can find what the Adel Taraf effect.
One of the things that I've really enjoyed about this transfer window is seeing where all the players that Fulham signed last season have ended up.
Didn't you say Seri's gone to
Galatasaray as well? I mean, again, just like how certain players, particularly Seri, were hyped.
But Seri was... I mean, not that it's a disgrace by any means to go to Galatasaray, because they're a huge club and we know that. But
it's a hell of a pull for them.
It is, massively. Given that, what is it, maybe 18 months ago, Seri was being linked from Nice to Barcelona for huge money.
Particularly if it does go through, he could be playing alongside Timo Bakayoko as well. I mean,
who is basically, you know, Timo Bakayoko, right? You know, when you were a kid and you had that game that you stand around in a circle and you pass the object, and if it goes off in your hands, you lose.
Yeah.
That's Bakayoko in football clubs. If he goes off when you're at your club, you lose. If he ends up at your place, you lose the game. That's what it's turned out. And he was so highly rated before.
Well, I think that's harsh.
He kind of reinvented himself a little bit.
He played well for Milan for a lot last season, didn't he? But
until his car ran out of petrol on the way to training and he was 2 hours late.
That was the end of it.
That was the end of it.
That's happened to all of us, James. I mean,
is there any concern around... Because Bruno Fernandes, I know it's only the Super Cup. I don't know that if it's taken more seriously in Europe. I suspect it might be. But Bruno Fernandes was captain of Sporting in that game, and they absolutely capitulated.
Yeah, I mean, it's an absolute mark of shame for Sporting.
Right.
I mean, to lose to their city rivals, not just lose to them, but absolutely humiliated by them. It's a big deal. And already there's a lot of pressure on Marcel Kaiser, the coach. But that they had a great picture.
Not toasting life, was, Kaiser. No.
they had a great picture of Bruno Fernandes on the cover, just in the small bit in the corner, obviously, because it was Benfica celebrating in the main bit of Ebola, with just, you know, his head down, you know, doing his penance. And, you know, he said, yeah, we should be ashamed. You know, it was embarrassing. And the thing was that they're in it for like a long time. Like in the first half, it was pretty even, but Benfica managed to get themselves in front. Bruno Fernandes himself had a couple of really good chances, and one of them, Bas Dost, was really upset not to get past the ball. But it really all fell apart in just a few minutes in the second half, where you had this terrible mix-up between, you know, two of their most experienced players, Sebastian Coates and Jeremy Mathieu, and Pizzi ended up scoring from it. And from there, I mean,
disgraceful.
They completely lost their heads.
They conceded three more goals after that, and Dumbia was sent off. Which to me, they all the red flags. I mean, by the way, first competitive game of the season, really, and that's how you collapse and capitulate against your local rivals. That is a very, very worrying situation. You wonder whether the fact that Fernandes has been linked so heavily, and I think he and his agent were having talks with the president of the club yesterday or something.
I think what I would say
is affecting the whole.
Imagine if it were the old president.
Yeah, I know.
You know, locked him in the changing rooms. I think the thing with Bruno Fernandes that you have to respect, he's a great professional. If he has to get on with it, he'll be able to do that. You know, he's not someone who can say is culpable for this defeat.
I'm not trying to blame him. I'm wondering whether the fact that he's a captain, he's by far their best player, and whether he's been continually linked with moves away, whether that's affecting the... I don't know. I'm just pontificating
I don't think that really
is. They've got Luciano Vietto now in to steady the ship. You know, unused substitute in that game.
What we have to say on the other side, Benfica were brilliant. Benfica, who lost João Félix this summer, they're absolutely fantastic. Raul de Tomás, who is a big new signing for them, he didn't score, but he really impressed. And I think he'll do very, very well for
Benfica.
Spent
20 million on him.
Yeah, and quite rightly so. I mean, I think they've done well to get him to come to Portugal, to be honest. I mean, this is a guy who was obviously from Real Madrid, but scored a truckload of goals on loan at Rayo Vallecano, where, you know, they're not really doing that much for him. He had to create his own chances a lot of the time. So I think he'll really, really thrive at Benfica. Seferovic, who miraculously has turned into someone who looks like a good striker there, is now at a point where he's signed a new contract, and he's talking about going forward and doing well with Benfica and continuing to win things. It looks like they'll be able to hold on to Ruben Dias as well. They've still got doubts goalkeeper wise because, of course, the Perrin move fell through because of his shoulder. But even though they're looking for a new goalkeeper, they've not got a problem because Vlachodimos is great in the meantime, and if they sell him, they sell him. If they don't, they don't. They've still got a good goalkeeper. I think it's hard to look beyond Benfica as the favourites for the championship last season. And the way they've ridden out losing such a key player, who such a totemic player as well in terms of what he represents for them and their academy, and João Félix, and obviously they knew he would go at some point, but they hope to keep him for another season. I think it's really, really impressive.
Ein Trainer ist ein Idiot. Ein Trainer sei, sehe, was passieren im Platz. Es gibt Spieler wie zwei oder drei, diese Spieler waren schwach wie eine Flasche leer.
On across in France in the Super Cup, James, I don't know if you saw this. A lot's been made of this, and I apologise to people listening because it isn't exactly breaking news, but I wanted us to have a long run up at this, and I'll give you the chance to go first, James. What do you make of Kylian Mbappe pushing Neymar out of a team photo after the 2-1 win over Rennes?
It was just a joke, wasn't it? It's all a joke.
What they said? Yeah, he looked really happy about it. Well, Neymar also looked really happy when Mbappe scored as well. The camera cut straight to him in the stands, and he wasn't even looking.
Yeah,
but it was the same with Heze, wasn't it?
I found that amazing.
He was sat there on his phone. He didn't even know that there'd been a goal.
Watching that, when the camera panned to the stands and there was Heze there, I was like, oh my God,
yeah,
Heze, yeah, he's still at PSG.
You're lucky to be here, mate. Put your phone away. Put it on airplane.
You're gonna have to pay for that tracksuit if you want to keep it.
What did you make of that? I mean, we've had a bit of a long run up at it, and we've seen the fallout. We've seen, as you've just alluded to there, the excuses that have been made and the explanations. What do you think of it, and what do you think it means for this season?
It didn't look good. You look at the reports that have come out in France over the last week about Leonardo putting together this... it sounds like his first book, essentially.
Bruce's detective.
A number of disciplinary kind of guidelines, code of conduct, essentially, for Paris Saint-Germain players.
Don't push teammates in public. That shouldn't have to be in a book.
Well, one of the main things was speaking to the media without a press officer giving you authorization to do it. So, just people granting interviews willy-nilly, which is great from journalists' point
of
view.
Of course, yeah.
But Leonardo doesn't think, sort of Neymar inviting a Brazilian journalist in to the training ground, having the interview with him at the training ground and the press officer not knowing anything about it. It's not a good thing.
Is it almost like he feels like he might be bigger than the club? I've started to put the jigsaw puzzle together here.
Yeah.
And it might mean that.
You also see it in the recruitment that Paris have done over this summer in particular, I think, where haven't really gone for superstars, just gone for guys who are sort of hardworking, disciplined, happy to be there. And
who then get injured? Ander Herrera.
Don't have egos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ander Herrera, ego-free transfer window.
I have to say, and there's other time in Football Ramble Day to talk about English football. I'm not going to propose we do that, but I have to say, I was very surprised that Man United didn't fight harder to keep Ander Herrera, I have to say, because he seemed exactly like you described him there.
Mm.
Exactly the kind of player you need.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see him starting every game for Paris Saint-Germain, especially after Garnier is fit and ready to go after his extended holiday. But it's an area of weakness for PSG, and they've dealt with it. It's kind of an opportunity signing. This, to me, feels like almost more of a Juventus window than a PSG window. I don't really think you can pay a much higher compliment than that. But players like, as you say, team guys like Sarabia, who's really good in this game, by the way, on what was an absolutely awful pitch in China. When, I think you could have forgiven some of their players for not fancying it at all.
Played at Shenzhen, is it, in China?
Yeah, that's right. And it was an awful surface. And against the Ren team, who weren't going to give them anything, who were winning 1-0 for quite a long time, and they had to come back and dig in and go and get the game, I think that's quite a positive thing.
What did you make of the Neymar situation?
I think it's a load of silly fuss over nothing, really. I think, like a lot of players who aren't John Terry, I think he probably felt a bit embarrassed to be in the picture when he had nothing to do with it. And the fact that players who are, at least in the revolving door, are invited along, like Neymar, like Jose, I can understand that to an extent they want it to seem business as usual, but there's too much focus on those guys. Well, obviously there's no focus at all on Jose because of Neymar. But to me, bringing along players that they basically know they're going to dispense with, I find a bit weird.
Not in the case of Jose. Just can't get rid of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was on loan now.
Proving as difficult to shift as Neymar.
Betis last season.
Yeah, I know. For different reasons. What about Di Maria's free kick? That's a beauty.
Very nice.
It's a beauty.
Great free kick. Also showcased this new rule. I don't know if you're aware of it.
Talk to me about the non-attacking players in the wall. So if
you're taking the free kick, none of your players can be in the wall disrupting it, causing a ruckus. And that sort of thing. So you've got to be 1 meter away from the wall.
That was one of my main jobs in my first year of my university team, standing in the wall and trying to create a gap.
Yeah,
it's pretty much all I was good for.
Yeah,
to be honest. I'd have no career.
Redundant
now.
Role.
I'll be done. Oh, by the way, if you want to hear more about, just quickly, James, if you want to hear people listening want to hear more about rule changes, Andy and Jules covered it on Tuesday on Football Ramble Daily, so you can get more information there. But they didn't cover the attacking wall one, did you, Andy?
I don't think so.
No. Carry on.
One of the reasons this was interesting to me was I was at Inter against Spurs on Sunday.
Yeah.
And Conte was talking about it. And he said, I like this rule. Well, my goalkeepers like this rule because it means there's no interference in the wall. So they should get a better sight of the free kick that's coming their way.
Yeah.
Now, the way Paris got around this was in terms of they interpreted the rule to mean that a metre away from the wall, okay. Well, why don't we just stand the metre in front of the wall? And that way we can basically, again, impede the view of the goalkeeper.
Kubek didn't really see it, did he?
No.
Although you have to say, from Di Maria's perspective, the dip on the free kick was pretty special. Mm. I think it's one of those ones where, you know, the goalkeeper doesn't end up looking great from it, but I think even if he'd have dived,
I thought it was a great goal.
I'm not convinced he would have saved it.
I don't propose to spend much time on this, but on the rule change things, I noticed that they've had to bring in something else to tackle this goal kick rule now already, because they don't want goalkeepers to flick the ball up to the chest of a defender to chest it back, and then the keeper can catch it and run out to the end of the box and boot it from his hands.
Mm.
They've had to put some weird kind of
disclaimer
kind of thing to say it's a really fuzzy wording as well to say, oh, you must do it in the spirit
of
the game.
That's unusual.
Yeah, I know, right? In the spirit of the game.
I really like seeing in this opening phase of the season how
people adjust to it, right?
Exactly, adjust to it, interpret those rules, and that was Benfica who ended up doing that.
Do you think they'll have a big impact? Do you think that particularly the goal kick one's going to have a big impact around Europe, I think?
Conte said it depends on how much risk you want to invite, because essentially you're making it harder to press, because, you know, if you can receive the ball in your own penalty area, then, you know, as the team that is pressing, you're going to have to cover more ground and maybe expose yourself in other areas. But he was looking at it from the kind of typically Italian kind of pessimistic point of view. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, if we screw it up passing, you know, closer to our goal, it's easier to score a goal. So
do you still think, do you still think Inter will be the nearest rivals to Juve?
Inter and Napoli, I think. Because there's been so much change at the top in Serie A. So Juventus have got a new coach, Inter have got a new coach, Roma have got a new coach, Milan have got a new coach. Only team that doesn't have a new coach among the contenders,
Napoli,
is Napoli, and that coach is Carlo Ancelotti. And I think, some of the signings that they've made, particularly at the back, really, really good. So, yeah, I'd keep a raised eyebrow looking at Napoli.
Of course, the biggest Super Cup of them all, and it's actually called the Super Cup internationally to appeal to the English audience, is the German one. And even though you've got a couple of weeks before the start of the season, Dortmund versus Bayern, that was feisty. I liked it.
Joshua Kimmich got in a bit of trouble, did he not?
Yeah, he did. Well, he stamped on Jadon Sancho towards the end of the game.
Got a yellow for it?
Yeah, a yellow from VAR. I don't understand, and I don't think anyone understands how, after VAR, you don't send Kimmich off for that.
Also, what I really liked about it is someone stamping on someone, was that it happened essentially right next to the VAR monitor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, but
it's not like too
good.
Close to the camera.
Yeah.
And it's also always reassuring to me when the Germans have their own version of he's not that kind of player, which Niko Kovac rolled out.
That's exactly what Niko Kovac
exactly,
said.
Yeah. It's not just English teams that do that. But the game itself, Jadon Sancho was irresistible again, wasn't he? I mean, he looks like he's going to have an even bigger season this season on that.
He was fantastic, and Paco Alcacer got the first goal as well. Dortmund were up for it. I think you can't read too much into this game because both of these teams went quite light on new signings.
Mm.
You know, for Bayern, Hernandez is not fit yet.
Yeah, he wasn't ready. Yeah,
Pavard was on the bench, and Boateng played in instead, which was a little bit of a surprise. It was just Nico Schulz as well who got the run out for Dortmund, with Mats Hummels not even in the squad. So we've got a bit to learn about both of these teams, but I think already it's kind of lit the touch paper in terms of the rivalry these two.
Would Thomas Müller be playing in that position, all things being well? He wouldn't, would he?
Yeah, I'm not convinced that's the case. I mean, I think a lot of people think Bayern could probably do with an extra midfielder.
Yeah.
I mean, when we're talking about teams being half finished, I think Bayern are one of the ones that spring to mind in terms of that. And, I think after having had Pavard and Hernandez sorted out so early, you expected a little bit more in the front half of the team.
It was curious to me that, perhaps not curious, but I mean, Bayern Munich kind of dominated the ball, they dominated possession, but they didn't, I mean, the effectiveness came from players, really incisive players like Jadon Sancho and the Dortmund. I mean, the second goal that Sancho ended up scoring,
they broke so quickly. I mean,
really fast. Yeah, so fast. I mean, Bayern, you know, it made Bayern Munich look like kind of a team of old men.
But you know what? They did this to Bayern last season, didn't they, in the first league game? I mean, you look at the goals in that, and specifically the winning goal from Paco Alcácer. I mean, I think they got from the edge of their own penalty box to Alcácer like dinking it over Neuer in something like 11 seconds.
Yeah. And also the amazing thing about that is you look at how many Bayern players are drawn to Jadon Sancho.
Yes.
I think about four players.
The danger of him, yeah.
And all of a sudden, yeah, he has the presence of mind to pick out Alcácer. And yeah, Bayern completely all over the place, out of the position. He's got the time and space to do. I don't think Neuer was particularly good in this game either.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't.
No, I mean, he's drifted a long way from his best. I mean, I think most people accept he's not Germany's best goalkeeper anymore. Mm. But is it going to get to a point where he's not Bayern's best goalkeeper? I suppose that's the answer. And I suppose it's far from an obvious answer, which is a concern already. But yeah,
what's interesting behind the venue, by the way, Andy?
The team that's not the league winner always hosts it.
Right, okay. Because I noticed that the one in Italy in January is in Saudi Arabia. Of course, we mentioned already that the French one was in China.
Yeah.
But they always play the German one in Germany, do they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Always.
Yeah. I saw
it's
you...
It's almost like they care about the fans.
I know. James, you know that Andy stuck his neck out earlier this week saying he thinks Dortmund are going to win the league this year.
Really?
So you're happy to stick with that on record?
Well, the thing is, I am. But the thing is, you're always getting asked these questions before the transfer window shut. Although it does look less and less likely like Leroy Sané is going to end up at Bayern now.
Because of his injury, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it might be a serious one at the time.
We've got faith in you, but now you're injured, we're not interested.
Yeah. I mean, it's the Bayern curse, you know, with Callum Hudson-Odoi, now Leroy Sané.
Yeah.
I mean, just back off these players.
And some of the players that even actually play for them, like Tolisso.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the reason that I went for Dortmund is, and I know they blew a big lead last season, but I feel the way they played in the Super Cup, I think tells you that, you know, we talked about them basically scoring the same goal twice in the fixture against Bayern, 9 months apart. It feels like there's continuity. They know what they're doing with Lucien Favre. Does it feel like Niko Kovac has got that kind of hold on his team? Does it feel like he's got that authority?
Well, they keep appointing coaches.
Does it feel like he's a bit...
They keep appointing people onto his backroom staff.
It feels like he's a bit... it feels like he's fragile. And I think the Sané...
He's walking into the training, I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, he was taking training today.
He's putting cones out. I don't know who he is. I've never seen him before. Yeah.
I think
is that Louis van Gaal?
I think the talk of the Sané transfer is a big part of that, because Kovac just comes out and says quite a vanilla thing. It's like, yeah, I feel good. I'm hopeful that it'll come. And Rummenigge says, oh, don't say that.
Right.
Don't say that. Right. You might affect it. I mean, you don't come out and publicly say that to the coach. Maybe you come out that you like admonish him behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But like ticking him off in public like that, that's a bad look. That's a really
I'm
bad
already
look.
Looking at, you know, potential dismissals, you know, of big clubs. You know, just because I'm a vulture.
Yeah.
Speaking
it's a really interesting part of watching football.
But, speaking of Van Gaal, he was clear in this France football interview that he's not officially retired. He just said, there's nuance. I said, I feel like I'm retired at the moment. That doesn't mean I am retired.
Did you guys see him at the tour?
No, oh yeah, in the car?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Did you see that, Andy?
Yeah.
In the tour, he was in the car. It's some kind of promotional thing.
Yeah.
And he's in the car riding alongside, is it a Dutch rider, presumably?
I think it's a Dutch team.
Dutch team.
He's,
and
he's with.
Someone, as they're driving on, someone puts... burgers through the window. Van Gaal just goes mad, doesn't he?
He looks so happy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, as I would be, you know, if some.
I thought this is the worst carpool karaoke episode I've ever seen.
Actually, I'd pay to
or
see
or the best,
that.
The best,
be
actually.
Amazing.
The best, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Kovac, you know, at Bayern, you know, if he starts as poorly, if the Champions League group stage doesn't go well, could see there being a change there. You know, you look at obviously United with Solskjaer. Zidane, everything that's going on at Madrid. Mm. And there are some good coaches out there.
I can't get a little niggling thing at the back of my mind that Zidane and Poch related to Pochettino.
Yeah?
I think so.
Zidane is related to Pochettino.
No. Zidane going to Real Madrid. Oh, it might be.
That's a scoop, man.
But it being related, it relating to how Pochettino stayed at Spurs. But anyway, that's another story. Giannini, Donadoni, och bra skott, och retur, och Chiracchi och mål!
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Batte lo spagnolo, cerca Koulibaly! Kalidou Koulibaly al 90th, segna per il Napoli.
I wanted to get into talking about transfers. I know we're in a bit of a difficult, weird moment at time of recording, and as you guys have already said, the transfer window doesn't close in parts of Europe till a bit later this month. But a few people have been in touch asking about
agents.
About players coming. No agents have been in touch. But
WhatsApp is going off.
Yeah. I tried to get rid of you on the free, but I couldn't. And naturally, people want to know about players coming from Europe into their club. And I think this would be a nice opportunity to talk about that. The email address going forward for this season will be otc@footballrambledaily.com. So do get in touch if you've got any questions, and we'll try and incorporate them as best we can. So there's a few I've picked out here. Apologies if I couldn't get to yours, because there were loads of them. But I've tried to pick out kind of the most popular ones. I'll start with you, James. Jacob says he'd like to know more about Patrick Cotrone moving to Wolves. For those of you who listen who are Patreon subscribers, patreon.com/footballrambledaily, James has already kindly given a little update on the Discord there. So become a patron and join the Discord to get that extra stuff. But James, why don't you give the rest of the listeners a bit of an update about Cotrone and what he brings to Wolves?
So Cotrone is Milan through and through, and came through their youth ranks and unexpectedly broke into the first team a couple of years ago. And that was the summer, if you recall, when Milan had been taken over by this mysterious Chinese guy, Li Yonghong, who paid more than 700 million, or used other people's money to pay 700 million in order to buy the club, and then went on this incredible spending spree where they bought a whole brand new team, including two strikers, Andre Silva and Nikola Kalinic. And the surprising thing is that Cotrone ended up basically
Being the man.
Yeah. Scoring more goals than them and becoming a real fan favourite, because there's nothing fans like more. It's just like Spurs fans with Harry Kane, and seeing one of their own come through and do the business for them. And he was gutted to be told that you're expendable. We think you've already kind of reached your potential.
He was literally told that, was he?
Yeah. Zvonny Boban was kind of like, well, yeah, we think you're probably as good as you're going to be.
Really? That's really harsh. How old is he now, James?
He's only, we're talking under 21.
Right.
But Cotrone is one of those goal scorers who just, he has that right instinct. You know, he knows where the ball's going to fall. Right position, right time. He's not particularly flashy in terms of skill, technique. We're not talking about a Lewandowski-style striker who can do a bit of everything, link play, combine. He is a goal scorer. And I think from Wolves' point of view, you know, be it just getting crosses in the box, be it just putting it in the mixer and hoping for a second ball or something like that.
So he's a player they're going to use off the bench, you think, then?
Well, I mean, this is the thing that he how he made a name for himself at Milan, in how they ended up like kind of coming under pressure from fans and the media. Is like, this guy has to be in the team, because he kept coming off the bench and doing it. And he's just got, I think, the right mentality. As I said, with Milan, the fact that he was playing for the club he supported, probably couldn't believe his luck that he was already in the team. He gave 110% from, you know, minute one of being on the pitch to the last. And yeah, I think it's one of those players. I remember Gary Neville saying, he never thought of himself as the best player at the club. He thought there were better players, you know, when he was coming through in his position, that sort of thing. But he sacrificed himself. Mm. He put everything into making himself better. Mm. Cutrone is definitely one of those kind of players.
You think he can have an impact?
Oh, yeah, without doubt. He's in my fantasy team.
But there you go. What ringing endorsement that is, Andy. Andy, you like Cutrone from what you've seen?
Yeah, I do. And it's something that Wolves really needed. The amount of work put on Raul Jimenez last season, I'm sure, was unprecedented by them as much as by him. I mean, it's the most football he's played in the season by far since he's arrived in Europe. So that little bit of relief is nice.
Mm. What about James Longston's been in touch as well?
Ah, James.
James. One of my favourite Jameses.
Yeah.
On one of among the OTC fraternity. Sebastian Aller into West Ham, Andy. You take
Aller,
the
Aller, Aller.
Keep it going. Yeah. Stick to it.
Backing vocals while I talk. I like it.
Yeah.
I think this is a great pull for West Ham, and I think you can tell by the fact that quite a lot of people.
Great pull. Like that. It's almost like they've gone to a nightclub. Yeah. What is it?
Don't get all Ian Hall.
Not the sort of parlance that you associate with Sullivan and Gold, is it?
Yeah.
But yeah. I think the indication is like a lot of people who watch the Bundesliga a lot, I think, surprised that West Ham were able to get him. And for them, and we've said before how, and I don't think it's any great secret, that they've had their share of travails with getting the best out of strikers.
Oh my gosh. They've had, I think, 38 of them since 2010, I think.
Well, this is maybe one that's going to take it in the other direction, because Aller is on an upward trajectory. He's someone who clearly always had potential, but I never felt totally convinced by, and a lot of people in France never felt totally convinced by. But what he's done in the last year and a half, particularly for Eintracht Frankfurt, I think has been brilliant. You know, he worked his way up a quite unusual route after being a rated youngster, going through the Netherlands, then to Frankfurt. And, you know, he was great last season. He's not just a target man. He's not just a goal scorer. He can create. He's got a light touch. He's someone who I think can really transform the way that West Ham play, but with the right players around him.
Yeah.
What clicked so well for them last season is the fact that they had Jovic, Rebic and Aller, and a coach in Adi Hütter brave enough to play all of them at the same time, which saw them through like three quarters of an amazing season. Of course, they faded a little bit towards the end when they ran out of legs and when Aller was injured, interestingly enough, as well. So, you know, he should do really well for West Ham, but yeah, right players around him.
Can you guys give us the kind of French / Bordeaux side of the story when it comes to Laurent Lolo Koscielny? Because he seems to have set fire to however many years.
Yolo Koscielny.
Yeah, he set fire to however many years he had at Arsenal.
Well,
and how do they see it in France?
Especially after what happened, it's clear that the tweet was of the shirt reveal was very ill-judged. But I think most people in France feel, as do I actually, that, you know, he did play there for 9 years. He was really good for them. And I think what's indicative of the feeling and what should be taken into account, I think, is how Koscielny spoke in his introductory press conference next to the sporting director, Eduardo Mattia, where he said, well, look, I've made a career choice and a life choice. He said, you know, I left home at 19 and now I can be a little bit closer to home. You know, he's got family and he wants to reconnect with other family. And I don't think, you know, he said, his words were, I've always respected Arsenal and I think I showed my respect on the pitch. I think that's a short but quite convincing argument, to be fair. And
why did he do the shirt thing then? Why did he agree to it? Why did he didn't have to do it?
No, he didn't. I already said I think he's poorly judged.
Yeah.
But to say that that's totally torched his Arsenal legacy, I think he's very harsh indeed.
We're living in the Twitter generation now, though, mate.
He's someone who did...
Fan TV. Yeah,
exactly.
He's someone who did an absolutely great job for Arsenal. Yeah. He did a really great job for Arsenal. They got their money's worth out of him. And, you know, it's not like he said last week, oh, I want to go to Bordeaux. They've known that he's wanted to go to Bordeaux for what 4 months.
He intimated that he was promised that he could leave this summer as well, didn't he?
Yeah, that's whether there's been some miscommunication or, you know, whether Arsenal have gone back on their word after realizing that he's still actually pretty important to their defense, we don't really know. But what we do know is he had it in his mind that he was coming back for a long time. He's a really loyal guy, he's a real stand-up teammate, so for him to take a step like not going on tour, he must have felt that they shafted him.
Do you think basically they disrespected him by partnering him with Mustafi? Yeah.
It's the straw that broke the camel's back. Yeah, the sight of Shkodran Mustafi with the captain's armband on in an Arsenal shirt upside down, by the way, is enough to strike fear in the heart of even the hardiest of Arsenal fans. A lot of interest, James, among our listeners, and also I think in the studio as well, in Raja Nangalan's move from Inter to Cagliari. It's listed as a loan, but I think there's probably a chance it's going to be made permanent at some point.
Yeah, I mean,
tell us why it's such an interesting move.
Well, it's interesting because he's essentially going back to what I think he would call his Italian home. Mm-hmm. In that this is the club where he kind of made his name after coming over from Belgium at Piacenza, and then moving on to Cagliari, and it's where the lore, the myth of Il Ninja sort of really began.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at Nangalan, where he's in his career, I still believe, you know, he's a player who could be playing in title-winning teams, certainly teams that are competing in the Champions League. But Inter drew a line in the sand just a year after he joined because of, you know, a range of factors, mainly disciplinary. You know, there were reports of him being late to training, liking the casino too much, and
40-a-day habit.
And also, with the new manager coming in, Antonio Conte, Conte is all about, doesn't matter how talented you are, you know, I want people with the mentality that meshes best with my way of playing football, mm-hmm, and just managing a football team. And in Icardi and Nainggolan, he identified two people who he wanted to move on from. The interesting thing with Nainggolan is I think he felt that he could maybe persuade Conte otherwise, and tried in training. It was really interesting when I was in Singapore with Inter that he was allowed to come along with the team, whereas Icardi was not. Icardi was told that pre-season training camp in Switzerland to go home and train at Inter's training ground near Milan. And but then when asked about it, Conte was like, no, there's no chance of him being reintegrated. We're looking to move him on. We want to bring in some money in order that we could reinvest that in Lukaku. And instead, yeah, they've come up against kind of a brick wall in that. Now England's like, right, I only want to go to a Champions League team. Champions League teams were not in for him. So he's like, well, in that case, I only want to go home. I want to go to Cagliari.
Yeah.
And Cagliari, it's their centenary year. And they were like, this is a fantastic move for us.
Do you think he'd gel well with Moran there?
Yeah, and I also think it's interesting in that you've seen this revolving door of Nicolò Barella, the Sardinian midfield player who's joined Inter for €49 million, go one way, and Nainggolan essentially trade places with him. So it's, I think, if you're a Cagliari fan, it's the best case scenario after losing Barella. But there's also compassionate reasons for the move. In that, yeah, again, I think Nainggolan, it's revealed in the summer that his wife, who's from Cagliari, from Sardinia, has breast cancer. And I think in terms of being close to home, close to family, again, it works. So, yeah, I mean, Cagliari are one of a number of teams, I think, in the kind of middle class in the Serie A table who have gone big this summer.
That's a really poor end to the season, didn't they? They've ended up finishing that right down there.
It's one of those things where you find yourself in a no man's land where you're safe, but you've got no chance of getting into Europe. I think they wanted to beat their points total. That didn't happen. But I think because it's the centenary year, they really want to make a push for Europa League.
And those size of clubs really lend themselves to like a talismanic type player, don't they? And Nainggolan could be that.
He's really got it in him to be a transformative player for them, hasn't he?
Yeah, without doubt, because Moran plays with a 4-4-2 diamond. He likes to have a 10. And, you know, I can see Nainggolan, as he did in the kind of final year at Roma under Spalletti, playing as a 10 behind the two strikers. And they're not finished yet, Cagliari. They're looking to get Giovanni Simeone from Fiorentina as well. So, yeah, they've had a really interesting transfer window. But, yeah, I would recommend our listeners go and look at the social stuff that Cagliari put around.
Worth a follow, are they?
Well, yeah, I mean, just going into the dressing room and instead of there being a shirt in his locker, there being sort of a ninja outfit. I like that.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. All right, guys. That's it. We're done.
Boom.
Should go and get that macchiato now, James. That I queued for earlier that I couldn't get for you.
Yeah. Let's do that. I could do with a coffee hit.
Could you? You'll get a hit, all right. Brassel, you happy with that?
I could do with some hot water.
Yeah, exactly. I'll try and do that for you. But and also you get a capuchin monkey as well.
You can.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.